Talk number 9 by Geoffrey Hodgson, given at the Crotona School of Theosophy in Ojai on November the 12th, 1977, entitled The Angelic Host, Their Radiant Beauty and Their Function. Mr. Layton and fellow students at this school of Theosophy. For ourselves, as students at such a school, the angelic hosts may be regarded and described as the active, creative intelligences and form builders of all objective nature. The angelic hosts, I submit to you, may be regarded and described as the active, creative intelligences and form builders of all objective nature. They are in this manifestations of the one divine spirit essence of the universe, and of course of its threefold expressions as the creative, the preservative, and transforming aspects of deity, the threefold logos of our universe. And it is taught, one learns, that from dawn to eve of creative day, they are ceaselessly active as directors, designers, artists, producers, builders, and yes, as my personal studies have convinced me, and also as quickeners of evolutionary procedures. And in the fulfillment of these and doubtless many other functions, they are expressive of the one divine will, the one divine life and thought of the universe. And so, briefly to repeat, the many functions of the angelic hosts would appear to be at least to be form builders of all objective nature, and evolutionary quickener of the unfolding life of everything within nature, including the angelic hosts themselves and ourselves as members of the human kingdom as well. For indeed, as I understand, it is a fundamental teaching of theosophy that everything in existence is continually passing through evolutionary procedure. You and I and all our fellow men and all else in nature, we are all inwardly going through a process of evolutionary procedure. Yes, a thought comes to me then, if I interrupt. Wise, I believe, is the individual who, if they are able to recognize this, who collaborates, who assents, who gives willing consent to the whole divine idea and procedure and collaborates therewith in everything they do. Friends, I believe that to be a very important truth indeed. A way of happiness almost. Now this continual evolutionary development applies especially as far as the angels are concerned to the subhuman kingdoms. Animals, plants, minerals, and other manifestations of the four elements of earth, water, air, and fire. The landscape angels, of whom pictures will be shown later. In the fulfillment of such functions, the landscape angels are, for example, especially active within and upon the life of the earth, the substance of which is relatively inert to external activities. Not entirely, but in a reduced fashion. The angels operate upon the evolving life within the mineral kingdom as well. Thus, just fortunately for us, yes, thus, as our great spiritual teachers ceaselessly aid us, all human beings, in our spiritual and moral evolution, so it would appear. The angelic hosts especially assist in the evolution of the life within the subhuman kingdoms of nature, though, of course, also upon ourselves. How do they perform such functions, we well might ask? How do the devas, as they are called, quicken the evolution of life, particularly in the plant and mineral kingdoms, especially the latter? Well, I offer suggestions to you only that they achieve this by directing or pouring into the indwelling life an extra, an additional inflow of stimulating or, yes, awareness arousing electrical energy. And this they derive from the one great creative source. And as far as I understand it, and of course within limitations, this ministration continues without a break throughout millennia and millennia of centuries. So one finds, on directly studying them, that the devas themselves are electrically charged beings. Indeed, as one watches them, one might say overcharged beings. For they are especially able to help, I understand, and for one particular reason. What is that? Well, I submit for use for your studies the absence in them of the delusion of being self-separate entities. A great and grave delusion, which is said to lead to nearly all our sorrows, the delusion of spiritual self-separateness. This is absent in the members of the angelic host, And this enables them to draw upon the virtually unlimited and cosmically available creative electrical energy with which the whole universe is filled. And this they draw upon, and as you will see from the pictures, direct into the kingdoms of nature. Indeed, one might almost say that since the devas maintain their presence, for example, at a mountain range or a single mountain or a landscape, in order to fulfill this function, they are thereby enabled effectively and efficiently to direct tremendously potent evolution-quickening forces into the hidden life in nature itself. And I believe this to be one large part of their function. All members, I am slowly becoming convinced, all members of the angel kingdom, from the little nature spirits, of which I'll show you pictures later, from nature spirits to archangels, are themselves, remember, undergoing the universal evolutionary procedure. Yes, the universe might be thought of as being a marvelous bud, or even an egg, which is perpetually opening out or hatching out an evolutionary progress and unfoldment is the continual procedure throughout our universe. So I have found myself convinced. The angelic hosts and the members thereof, they do differ from ourselves in one of many aspects, and that is, as you know, that as monads, they are evolving through the non-human or angelic kingdoms of nature. And in so doing, they do not assume physical forms, etheric perhaps by the little nature spirits, and of the subtler levels of nature as they evolve. I've used one of the names then. They are variously named devas, a Sanskrit word which means shining ones, and very aptly describes them, for they are marvelously radiant beings. They're also called the bright-crested one, another very suitable name. In Kabbalism, the 10 Sephiroth, the hosts of the Logos, the archangels of the face of God. In Hinduism and Sanskrit, also, one finds the title given to them of, strange word for some of you perhaps, Gandharvas, G-A-N-D-H-A-R-V-A-S, the Gandharvas, or the seraphic choristers in the great angel choir of the Logos, ever chanting the music of the one divine composer of all. So I repeat there, I went rather too fast, did I? They are variously named devas, or shining ones, bright-crested ones, the 10 Sephiroth of Kabbalism, the hosts of the Logos, the archangels of the face of God. And another title comes to my mind, the archangels of the presence of God. The Gandharvas, or seraphic choristers in the great angel choir, ever chanting the music of the one divine composer of all. Included amongst these, of course, are, yes, the great angels of the presence, referred to as the mighty spirits before the throne. All angels, I suggest to you, may thus be regarded as the physically invisible, yet omnipresent, manifestors and engineers of the one propellant power by which alone all things are made, and without which nothing was made that has been made. And so, yes, from nature spirits to cherubim or archangels, all these intelligences make manifest, without the intervention of individuality, make manifest the one divine idea, the one divine thought, the archetypal or original plan. As students approaching such a subject, are we in any way contradicting Christian teachings or being contrary to our Bible, for example? I suggest not. For the very fourth word in the Bible is, for some reason which I've not been able to find, deliberately mistranslated. That fourth word in English is God. In the beginning, God created the universe. Bereshit, bara, Elohim is the word in the original. Elohim, not God. And it's nearly always wrongly translated in our Bibles, and I notice on the continent of Europe and elsewhere, always translated as the English word, God. Thus, in the beginning, the Bible would seem to say, not God, with all reverence I mention that name, in the beginning, not God, but the Elohim created the heavens and the earth. For in the Hebrew original, the correctly used word Elohim is really a plural word, meaning the totality of the spiritual intelligences by whose agencies all worlds and all things are conceived in the major mind and made objectively manifest throughout nature. The Elohim, plural, it denotes several principles. The male-female hierarchies of creative intelligences or potencies through which the divine produces the manifested universe. Or, yes, the Elohim, the unity of the divine powers, the attributes and creative activities of the supreme being. And this is a plural word, Elohim. The single, if they wanted a single word, then the Hebrew word would have been E-L-O-H-A, Eloha, which means, by the by, a God. Elohim, therefore, literally means gods, personifications or divine attributes of the forces of work in the formation, preservation and regeneration of all nature according to the one divine idea. The angelic hosts, in truth, are manifestations of the concept or archetypal pattern in the divine mind. Now, does this, just to ask students question all this a little further, does this concept of the existence, yes, and of the function of the divine archetypal mind contradict the findings of modern science? No, not in the least, as doubtless most of you are aware. Certain modern scientists have in recent years affirmed their belief, formed from their investigations, in the existence of what they refer to as a directive intelligence in nature. Sir James Jeans, for example, states that for him, the universe looks less like a great machine than a great thought. We discover, he goes on, that the universe shows evidence of a designing or controlling power, that it has something in common with our own individual minds. The universe, he goes on, can best be pictured as consisting of pure thought, coming very near now to Theosophia, the age-old divine wisdom. The universe can best be pictured as consisting of pure thought. The thought of what, for want of a wider word, we must describe as, very interesting now, we must describe as a mathematical thinker. Sir Arthur Eddington writes, "Modern physics has eliminated the notion of substance. Mind is the first and most direct thing in our experience." He says, "I regard consciousness as fundamental and matter as derivative from consciousness. The old atheism is gone," he says. "Religion belongs to the realm of spirit and mind and cannot be shaken." Interesting development, especially for the older ones amongst us who remember that atheism and materialism of not too long ago. Another quotation, if I may interest you in this a little longer, it's very important for the understanding of our subject. "Space itself," says a Dr. Alexander, "instead of being an empty nothingness, as it was formerly thought to be, is in reality a mighty ocean of directive intelligence, which governs not only the formation of all the physical bodies within it, but regulates their courses afterward." How near coming to Theosophia. And my time does not permit me to follow that part of our subject any further, but I could just say that interesting experiments have just been carried out which reveal that such vegetables as potatoes and other carrots and other substances, potatoes, algae, carrots, earthworms, and salamanders, whose intake of food is timed by the position of the moon. But they collected a lot of them and they put them in a laboratory where the temperature and the light was kept unchanging. Made no difference. They knew when to absorb nutriment. They know where the moon is, whether it had just appeared over the horizon, whether it is at the zenith, or whether it is setting. Thus, say these scientists, we live in a universe which thinks. There we are. The occult scientist fully agrees, always has, but takes one step further. And only one, I suggest. I suggest that finding, as we have seen, that the life-giving and the form-producing and evolution-quickening of nature, as of all these potatoes, algae, earthworms and salamanders, it's all aided. It's not only instinctual. It's aided, directed by the actions of hierarchies of creative intelligences, the appropriate orders of the angelic hosts, our subject. And so our thoughts are led to the theosophical idea of the deity as the conceiving mind, a divine intelligence, which includes an irresistibly powerful, dynamic, archetypal concept of the universe to be. Thus, theosophists tend to regard the deity as God, the conceiving power. So now, I may move on more definitely to our subject. From the beginning, and when the emanation of universes occurs, and all resultant forms are produced from dawn of the creative day, right on throughout the whole period of the existence of universes, the divine idea is constantly finding manifestation in all that exists. And the great creative hierarchies of the angelic host are one with that idea. They embody in perfection the divine idea. And in consequence, this idea finds expression throughout the whole of the orders of the angelic intelligences. Of course, we know at the etheric and physical levels, certain hierarchies of creative intelligences are represented by the minor builders of form, of whom I will show you a few pictures eventually, called nature spirits, the Sephiroths in miniature, if you like. They operate instinctually, largely by playing along the lines of force, stimulating to them, which form the geometrical patterns set up in the all-pervasive ether by the vibrating thought, word, force. Very often, for example, if you can see at all, when you see a line of live electrical wire, especially strong ones, coming into the room, you may see playing along it, because it stimulates the little nature spirits, dancing along and back, quickened. I've sometimes thought almost drunken by the stimulating effect of the electrical energy. Well, these beings, friends, I know, are normally invisible to us because they live in superphysical worlds. And the function of some orders is perpetually form building, form changing, form preserving. And this is their work according to the archetype in the divine mind. And these archangelic and angelic beings may be regarded as directors of universal forces, or if you like, yes, power agents, engineers in the great creative processes. The highest archangels, from whom in turn the angelic hosts emerge, they are included within such emanations. So we might, in such a study as this, think of the angelic hosts, the members of the angelic host, as mind-born emanations from absolute life. And the nearer in time and condition to absoluteness, the greater these wondrous beings, until you come right to the angels before the throne of God, a wondrous hierarchy of angelic presences. Yes, there is a way open there, friend, to those, as I said in earlier lectures, those who find the faculty disturbing or awakening in themselves, and who are moved with a will to discover the truth behind this maya or illusion of nature, then it is possible, by the exercise of the appropriate faculties, to know some or more and more of these truths, more and more of these beings, by direct research. In Christianity, we are taught of 9 orders of angels, each with their function. I expect you remember them. Thrones, dominations, princedoms, powers, angels and archangels, cherubim and seraphim. And the word goes on, and all the company of heaven. The whole wondrous, glowing, self-shining host of the angelic beings with which, in its subtler realms, our universe is filled. And as little by little the inner sight opens, they gradually become visible to the awakening one. Amongst these are many kinds of angels about which you might be interested. There are, for example, what are called national angels. As far as I understand, that when a nation has become well established, a member, a very lofty member of the angelic host, either becomes appointed or assumes the position of what is known perhaps as the national angel. And this being, at the formless levels of consciousness, the higher mind and the intuition, and beyond doubtless, this being knows the pattern and the plan in the divine mind for the evolution of the members of that particular nation, and how best it may be quickened, and so on. And these ceaselessly at work, they are known as, in theosophical books one finds, as national angels. Then there are the angel builders of form, of whom I am spoken, and they include those concerned with the building of all the mineral, plant, and human and other forms. No forms are built haphazard or grow unplanned. True, the changes in cells and arrangement of molecules are to some extent electrically decided, nevertheless, there are, I believe, intelligences at work associated with the growth of forms in our world. And then I've said, and I won't continue, won't repeat, there are the angel quickeners of the evolution of life. That I will show rather better, I hope, when the pictures are on the screen. And then, yes, of course, I mustn't omit what we're so many of us brought up to believe in, aren't we? And that is the angels associated with religion. There is, I am also convinced, a profound truth there, that each of the great world religions is presided over, helped, inspired, especially when its human servants are responsive in the fulfillment of the ideal of that religion. And so we have in our own Christian faith angels of our churches, angels of the divine presence, angels at the altar, angels by the consecrated host, a very wondrous being indeed, marvelous to perceive and conceive when once the transubstantiation has changed bread into a glowing, pulsing center of additional spiritual life. And that's guarded and very carefully distributed out to those who receive and into the world. And the great abbeys and old churches, yes, who have been when they were built and then finally opened, ceremonially blessed and consecrated, a great angel takes up, as it were, a position in association therewith and assists not only in the work of that abbey, cathedral, or church or chapel alone, but in helping the worshippers to receive the response to prayers, to heal here and there, particularly where there are healing services. All this, my friends, I am firmly convinced, is functioning actively under and by the aid of great orders of angels of healing, angels of loving thoughtfulness for all that is in need and all humans who suffer. Yes, not only are we watched over, friends, and cared for by our great Lord Jesus Christ himself and his assistants, and perhaps, if that's your belief, the world mother, but by the angelic hosts themselves. And there are those orders, I believe, who are especially associated with the work of the world religion, right on down to one's own personal shrine in one's home, where one's prayers, not so much for oneself, but for others, may daily be uttered. A very good practice, for no one is beyond the range of being helped by prayers of healing in the name of the great healer of the world. And the flowing energies that respond are many of them directed, preserved, carried to their recipients by members of the angelic host. And this, my friends, and this is my purpose really this morning, this is a great reality, even though I know it has to be an act of faith for most of us. But angels of healing do exist. And it doesn't matter where a person may be, how old or how young they may be, how safe they may seem to be, or how much in danger perhaps, the prayers of an earnest believer in the divine and in the great divine lover of all, Those prayers are always answered. And a stream of healing, protective, saving, even directive energy will come in response. And where karma permits, assist the recipient, definitely healing and helping them on their pathway through life. Yes, my friends, this is a reality. I do know that. Yes, and there are guardian angels as well. And so on, but time does not permit, though the pictures you are now about to see will illustrate my not very well expressed attempt, I fear, to bring this whole subject before you. At the heart of existence, then, is God, the conceiving mind, the one great divine, archetypal thinker of all. And all that exists is the product of the projection of the will thought of that divine mind. And in the resultant formation and evolution of all that comes into existence, the angelic hosts aid the great conceiver in the fulfillment of the great plan. That, if I may thus speak personally to you, that is what I have come to believe concerning the angelic hosts, and am happy, for what it's worth, to share with you. Friends, a few words about the origin and one reference to the nature of these pictures. They were painted by a South African lady friend who lived near Cape Town and was a considerable artist, but largely a sculptress. But she very kindly lent her arts and was ready to modify them considerably in the drawing, in painting the pictures you are about to see. Her name and the details are to be found on the introduction to the book in which the pictures appear. The one point I want to just mention is that it was considered advisable not to paint in the whole shining auras of most of the devas whose portraits were attempted. This was because when that was done, the central form became invisible. As you will see in those few cases where we tried to include both. But the radiant aura, which often will reach out for hundreds of yards in the more involved individuals, completely obscures, except to an inner vision, the central form of the angel concerned. I think now, with the help of our brother Felix Leighton, then, and the lights out, please, we could look at the pictures together. That is an attempt to portray a rather lowly evolved nature spirit of Earth called a gnome. They being of varying degrees of development. They live mostly below the surface of the Earth, but this one was envisaged at the surface. Its height would only be about 12 inches altogether, and as you see, it has a very peculiar, non-human look. Next. Thou grass nature spirits, the commonest kind of all, as far as objective appearance is concerned. They are on the surface mostly, and wherever fresh grass is growing, they are to be found in very large numbers and in sizes about, as you see, in proportion to a blade of grass. They, like many of the fairy creatures, that peculiar attribute which makes them look horned is to be seen as far as my limited understanding goes. It gives them a very peculiar, non-human, otherworldly look sometimes. Hands and feet, as you see, are not formed into fingers and toes, and the whole form is built, except for the face, of flowing energies, which the artist really portrayed, I think, very well indeed. Same order of nature spirit. Some of them are grass nature spirits, are joyous creatures reveling in the upward flow of energy from the earth, the electric energy of the earth, and other subtle forces associated with grasses and other plant growths in which they excel and which they enjoy very much indeed. There is, as I was saying at the beginning, surrounding that central form, there is, with varying degrees of size, according to evolutionary development, a kind of shining aura, generally in these cases about three times the size of such a central figure. A grass nature spirit. Thank you. Next. A group of them taking a flight through the air as they do, swinging and flinging their way through the etheric world, very much like that. It has struck me, for what it's worth, that this attribute of joy is one of the characteristics of the Devar kingdom as a whole, and particularly of certain orders of nature spirits. They always seem to be having a wonderful time of life, if one may say so. And that's rather well shown by Miss Quayle in that small group. Next. Now we have moved up into the kingdom of air, and we have what is known as a soup. Yes, or rather fairy, you might say. A very beautiful portrayal of a fairy. As you see, the winged effect is not that people catch sight of, isn't really due to the presence either of wings or as wings used in flight. They don't need anything of the kind, being will and thought moved according to their own decisions. But their auras do often stream out on either side or behind them to give the impression, that beautiful impression, well portrayed, a wonderful, radiant, winged, small creature, a kind of super fairy. Next. Now, more highly evolved, we're going up in the scale somewhat. Now we've come to a more highly evolved resident of the kingdom of air, and more highly evolved, but you see also the winged-like form is produced by the outflowing from the central force, which, by the by, generally has a whirling force center, outwards or above, giving a beautiful wing-like effect. The hair also, as in the angelic host, simply streams up above and behind in streams of energy, though of course it is not in any way hair at all. About 4 to 5 feet tall, the central form. Next. Now water, a water nature spirit, very primitive, where the center of intelligence, if any, would be, is there where Sandra is pointing, and it's flitting over the water, and it's all our streams out behind it, again to give a sort of wing-like effect. I'm aware that it doesn't mean anything, but thought perhaps it might be included as a type of very primitive water nature spirit. Undine. Oh, I suppose the central place would be 4 to 5 feet in extension. Next. Now we come to a very highly evolved member of the angelic hosts. That figure, it... Do you want to do something, Sandra? Yeah. Yes, the head. The head is just there, where Sandra is showing. And where our feet would be down below, yes, where the wings stream out. Again, the central aura is not shown. This was a very highly evolved angel, rather, although it is blended somehow with the nature spirits. And the figure itself was at least 8 to 10 feet tall, surrounded by shining, glimmering aura of chiefly white and blue. Next. There is an elemental of fire. We're still in the realm of nature spirits, though the one preceding this had individualized. But these have not. And there you have an elemental of fire. Each of the four elements has its own order of nature spirits, and these are the elementals of fire. What are they called?
Salamander.
They are generally known by the name of salamander. They are generally 6 to 8 feet tall or less or more, according to the size of the blaze with which they may be associated. Of course, those at volcanoes are very much larger. Yes, about 8 feet, the central form, but the wing-like radiation stretch out much further even than the picture displays. Next. An elemental of air. The form is there. The head, face would be there, and feet down at the, yes, somewhere down there. Yes. That particular one I caught sight of, if you can permit me to say that, excuse me, was descending. And it did seem that its aura was sweeping behind it like that. Oh, about 8 or 10 feet, a sylph, they are called. The names are, and the younger ones might like to remember, the fire ones are called salamanders, and the elementals of air are called sylphs, and of water are called undines, and of earth, gnomes. Gnomes, undines, sylphs, and salamanders. Yes. Well, that's the beautiful sylph. Next. Now we've entered the realm of the very highly evolved angels. Yes, the face would be there. I'm afraid we lose a lot by projection. Well, now that extraordinarily wonderful being, the form may have been up to 20 feet tall, was moving about as if in charge of a great forest up in the mountains of Ceylon, where I was staying with tea planters and trying to do some research in that region. And this great being came floating from far distance and, as if knowing, was halted there briefly, so that the inner form and sweeping aura might possibly be discerned and described that very peculiar phenomenon there, friends, of being horned like that is not also not unusual with certain members of the Devic kingdom. And it gives them a very queer, utterly non-human look always. Next. Also a tree deva without the aura. There again, the aura itself would more than have filled the whole picture. That's in South Africa near Cape Town at what they call the umbrella pines. Some of you may ever have seen them. Yes, oh, 20 to 25 feet tall, that golden figure, and it is, as you see, power is streaming down through it into the hidden life in the plant kingdom and the trees under its charge. There was, in fact, quite a large, almost forest of these umbrella pines over which it seemed to be presiding and upon which it was operative. The aura stretched, very large indeed, quite highly evolved, individualized, tree deva. Next. A less evolved tree deva of Sinjava. That's a little fruit tree. Yes, there the form is hardly visible. That's the head where Sandra is pointing. The feet down near the trunk. Yes, and it's, you see, flowing out from it throughout every leaf and stem, there is this radiant energy of which I spoke in my attempted representation of all this. So that's a less evolved and not individualized tree nature spirit. On the threshold of angelhood, I would say, at work upon that, what's called in Java a Wairingan tree. Next. Fire deva, associated with a, curiously, with an extinct volcano. We were driving through South Africa, we passed an extinct volcano, and my eye caught the presence of this being from quite deep down into the crater, right above the mountain peak and high into the air, shining and glowing with all this tremendous fiery force. Not all of it being fiery colored, however. A wonderfully beautiful but very mysterious being, unlike every other I've ever seen. A fire deva. Next. Now we come to the mountain gods, if you like. The mountain deva, South Africa again, from there right down to the peak of the mountain, about 25 to 35 feet in height, very large indeed. It's near the amphitheater at the Drakensberg Range, if any of you know it, in Natal. Well, there that being attracted me because where the form is, you could go and show, Sandra, where our solar plexus is, there was a spinning vortex behind and on either side and facing forwards, four spinning chakras. And as I examined, I saw that these were being used to receive from higher planes the energy to which I referred and specialize and then send it streaming down into the evolving life in the mineral kingdom of nature. Again, only a small portion of the whole aura is visible. Next. Yes, that's lovely, isn't it? There Miss Quail did try to show the whole aura as well as the deva. The central form is there, as Sandra shows. The radiant energies you see flowing from the personal ovoid aura rather, and then that great winged form reaching out for hundreds of yards on either side, and then streaming down from above through the vehicle down into the life principle in the Drakensberg range. Yes. Really, considering that it's impossible even to describe this which is all in continual, tremendous, highly illumined motion, really, Miss Quayle did wonders to catch my poor attempts at description. Next. Ah, yes. That's another very great mountain deva. And there again, we tried to keep the whole aura in. But you see, Sandra is showing you, but actually the form, that's the face. Yes, Sandra, there. That's the solar plexus and the feet lower down. Yes. Now, that is a very highly evolved deva in the desert just above Cape Town, facing out towards the South Pole, with which it seemed to have some coordination. And as you see, power is streaming down into and through it, out into our world, and below into the mineral kingdom below. A great center of divine power. Yes. Ah, yes, that's beautiful, isn't it? Now, there, no attempt was made, friends, to show the outer aura. So you only just see the central form, which is just where Sandra's pointing. The upward aura, it's interesting that, as I watched, it makes a most beautiful chalice, really, which was receiving the energy which passed through it, even in that almost... Yes, caduceus-like or kundalini-like intertwining and then pouring down into that, which was one of the mountains of the Table Mountains in South Africa. The actual aura would reach right from wall to wall of this room in painting size, a very great and wonderful being. Next. There we are, yes. That's in that beautiful and wonderful garden in Cape Town, horticultural garden, yes. Again, no attempt was made for her to paint the aura at all, just the inner form only, the upward weaving, wonderful aura, apparently for purposes of recipients, from higher planes of the divine energies, their passage through the central part of the deva down into both the mineral and plant kingdoms below. Yes, that's a very well-known mountain in one of the great horticultural and beautiful parks near Cape Town in South Africa. The aura, again, of enormous size, beyond that form, and the whole glowing with a light which it's impossible physically to portray. Next. The same one. We attempted to get also an impression of it from the side. We spent over 3 days on these two pictures alone, sketching, drawing, describing. The same scene from the side with that great mountain which is there and the deva above it. Again, the aura completely, the outer aura completely excluded, though the glow is indicated. Next. Well, that's a landscape deva of the Sierra Nevada ranges, the whole range here in California, and a great deva whose dimensions I couldn't even pretend to measure. So marvelously shining, great and glorious was it, as it seemed to me to be passing rather slowly from the south to the north of the great snow-clad rain. Next, another of the same kind, but in this case, and also in that region, the form was surrounded by a spherically arranged aura, which suggests almost, as in human evolution, an adeptic attainment. The aura being thus arranged in wonderful concentric rings, or if you like, globes of radiant color. That's another great landscape deva passing over the area under its charge, and as it passes, it sheds its mighty power down. And then the individual mountain devas, they are doing the same on the peaks, and they are all in touch, all working together on this tremendous process of what we might call the electrification of the mineral kingdom. Next. Almost beyond understanding, yeah. Well, I can only leave it for you just to see it. It was a great landscape deva, which even in her skill in painting nearly disappeared. However, we thought to save the wonderful picture. Now, where that pink is where the form is. So you can imagine the aura of that being, the form often being up to 15 or 20 feet tall. Again, you see, from above, power is, in our words, our three-dimensional terms, descending, passing through and then down into the evolving life forces in the plant and mineral kingdom of the mountain below. The aura again, the real outer aura, not portrayed. Next. The same thing, a great landscape deva, about which there's very little I can say. All I've just said to you is applicable here, except that this was the only case I have remembered where there was a great shining sun-like radiance there and down in the lower part of the aura. And those two made of this, you can't see the central figure, small in there, made of the aura of this great landscape deva, something tremendous to behold. And you could imagine the power which was being radiated upon the world. Next. A very highly evolved deva of the Pacific Ocean, of an area of the Pacific Ocean south of Java. Yes, about 15 to 20 feet tall in that body, which is the mental body of the being. I'll show you the higher vehicle directly. And curiously enough, this mental form took an almost shell shape, and the aura took waves almost like the waves on a shell and on the ocean. And it was most wonderful to watch it as it slowly moved over its kingdom, the kingdom of the Pacific Ocean south of Java. Next, I caught a glimpse of its ego. Yes, there it is. Now, same place, but now you see the reality as far as extreme limitations are able even to comprehend it. The inner central aura was in that peculiar form that you see, and there was where the center of consciousness was, at the higher mental and intuitional levels, and the form was floating a little lower, but that's the real being with all the splendid radiance it was bestowing upon the world. And in this case, you see not only from above, down below into the earth, but look at those rays, which I have more than once seen, shining forth into great distances through the air from this order of devas. Yes. Next. I wonder if any of you have been to Java and have ever visited the ancient Buddhist tomb of which is called the Borobudur. If so, then above it, established there, is a very wonderful deva. At the adept level, if not greater, as again you can tell by the concentric aura, and again that outward radiance into far distance. The Borobudur itself is, I believe, one of the highly magnetized shrines still preserved on earth. And I was glad to see the other day that the present Javanese people are having it repaired since it's quite aged. But that's good because it really is one of the great centers of power for miles and miles of that part of the world. Next. Yes, I can't really explain that to you, friend. I'll give you the name of it. It's a Kundalini Deva. You know that tremendous force about which I was speaking to you the other day? We had a whole morning on it. Kundalini Shakti, which I really chiefly described and tried to understand as far as man is concerned. But the whole cosmos is Kundalini charged. And so, and this comes from the sun, and which is portrayed at the top of the picture and is also existent and preserved down at the earth, in the center of the earth. And between these two, there's a tremendous interchange always occurring. And in the Kundalini awakened person, then that triple force flows through, as I showed it with pictures the other day. A wonderful, a flashing opportunity is all I could call it, of a Kundalini Deva. Next. How they've faded, I'm afraid. You're losing so much, dear friends. We're in the realm of healing devas. Below is the cot and the poor person lying in it. And then a healing deva of love and Christ-like wisdom is hovering above the suffering patient with its wings filled with love and its heart still more, and the whole a chalice through which into the patient healing grace is flowing. That's one order of the healing deva. Yes. Next. Another. That wasn't drawn really from a vision of mine. Miss Quayle conceived it, but correctly, she thought, a child fell walking down those steps in the garden, and not severely hurt but frightened, and an ancient great green and gold healing deva within range came at once and took it within its aura and helped and healed and soothed it, as indeed the great devas of healing will do. Height, 15 or 20 feet, the central form. Wonderful beings. Yes. You can see where the heart is, Sandra. We can, just there. Thank you. Next. Now there you see the bed on the right, and another order of deva is hovering near the foot of the bed and above it, and sending a stream of golden, Christ-like, healing, harmonizing power through its heart into the whole of the aura and body of the sufferer. And that is very much the way in which the healing devas do assist. They're a very great reality, friends. I assure you, as I ventured to say in my talk, though, of course, in theosophy we have no dogmas and all is offered for our consideration alone. Well, we're nearing the end of the pictures, friends. What is next then, Mr. Layton? Oh, yes. That's a deva of love. Wondrous being. Aura entirely omitted, the central form of a deva, which is entirely embodiment of the divine love, the love of God, the second aspect of the Blessed Trinity. I wish you could see it. You can see these all much better if you go into the library and look at my book, The Kingdom of the Gods. Next, the same. This very beautiful being hovered for a time and enabled Miss Quayle and myself at least to catch the sort of glimpse. You see, they are continually alive with movement, that it makes it very difficult to catch the real form. But however, that something as the very inner, almost human-like face and head and shoulders might appear with all the winged and streaming energies emanating from the form. Next. Do you remember I mentioned in my talk an order of devas which in Hinduism they call Gandharvas, angels of music, angels of song, angels of the great choir of Brahma? Well, there is an attempt to draw one of them with his aura, and you imagine a whole host of them together in the higher inner planes, sending forth upon the world the wondrous divine music of the great composer of all. Remember, dear friends, these are all attempts, and as I now look at them, I see how very limited they are, but they are the best I could describe, and my gratitude to Miss Quayle for her patience and time she spent in producing at least these attempts to help us to visualize these beings. Next. Now we're coming to the human kingdom of nature. And you know, it is believed, friends, by some people that our Blessed Lady Mary, who was the mother of Jesus, in her turn also attained at the Assumption to the stature beyond the human kingdom, and then chose one of the seven pathways open to the adept of entering the angelic kingdom of nature. Thereupon she became the embodiment of the mother aspect of divinity for our planet. And it is by personal belief merely offered to you that her radiance and a measure of her blessing and presence are there during pregnancy and at the birth of every child. Yes. Now there you have the mental body, the emotional body, and in utero, the lower, the physical bodies are growing, all within the glowing and splendid influence of our Blessed Lady, the World Mother, as some people are inclined to refer to the Blessed Lady Mary, the World Mother for this period of Earth's history. Again, this is merely proffered to us just for our interest at all. In other religions, the same concept exists, and I have met mothers who told me that during pregnancy and at childbirth, they were aware of a divine being who helped them through the difficulties of delivery. Well, there, it's more a symbolic picture of our Blessed Lady during the period of pregnancy of a mother-to-be. And last, I think, one more, next. Yes. just a moment to hold that. Some of you may have had this vision. I've met those who have, who worship the Blessed Lady Mary, the great and wondrous divine mother of the world, who helps all, especially all womanhood, but of course all human beings, who is engaged in caring for mothers to be, children, newborn, and afterwards. For no one, I have come to believe, is ever really alone. However deep the physical sorrow may cause them to seem utterly alone, inwardly all of us are guided and helped as far as may be by either one of the great lords of life or our Blessed Lady, the great mother of the world, the Blessed Lady Mary. Well, dear friends, thank you for coming in from so far away, and that concludes my attempted exposition of this subject, and with thanks to Mr. Layton for projecting. Thank you.